Right, this is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And I want to give out the number now that we've been given out before. It's the toll-free number from all over the world. Anyone who wants to call in from anywhere in the world can use this number. The number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. But people have been telling me, I keep thinking, we don't get that many call-ins. Well, I've been on the road, and people have been telling me at my lectures, you're right, we don't want to call in because we want to listen to you. So I guess that's the reason. But there is the number, just in case, anyway, because we do get involved in so many things. Now, tonight I was supposed to have a guest, and he was a guest that I was looking forward to. He's somebody I've known for a long time. I think you'll notice all the people that I have on my show that are guests are all people that I know, and they're all people that, you know, I've known for a long time, and that's ones that I usually ask to be on the show first. We get a lot of emails from people wanting to be on the show, and the only thing I can do is put them in a folder, and I will contact them if I think it's appropriate after we start running down. But right now, I've been asking the people that I know. Well, it was supposed to be David Hatcher Childress, who is a wonderful man, and he had to cancel out on me at the last minute. Some of you may be familiar with him. I don't know how many times he's probably been called the real Indiana Jones, but he is an adventurer, an amateur archaeologist, and he travels everywhere. I mean everywhere, places that you wouldn't even think anybody could get into. And he does the real exploring, and he's found things that people don't know about. He's written, many, many books. But when he called today and had to cancel, I said I wouldn't have been surprised if you were telling me you were going to Outer Mongolia, because believe me, he's been there. Anyway, he said that he will reschedule, and we'll be talking to him maybe in October or November, whenever we can fit it into our schedules again. But he was the one I was supposed to do tonight. So I guess it's just going to be me tonight talking anyway. But I have been on the road again the last 3 weeks, and that's why I haven't had a show. I think they said they've been doing reruns on the shows, broadcasting, I guess you would say, the shows that I've already done, because I've been traveling. And I told Don, I said, I've not learned how to do a show yet from an airplane. If I'm in the air, it's kind of hard. Or if I'm doing a class somewhere, like the last one I just got back from was in California. We go live here in Arkansas at 7, and that means it was 5 in California when I was still giving my class. So sometimes it's hard to be in two places at once. You don't know how many people have told me that I need to be cloned. Or they think maybe you are cloned in order to do all the work that you've been doing anyway. But I do want to say something else that happened this last week. We got an email from someone who wanted to know. They said they had heard that I'd passed away. And I thought that was so funny. Here I am on the road all the time, and they thought I'd passed away. It reminds me of what Mark Twain said. The stories of my demise are greatly exaggerated. Because believe me, I'm a long way from that. But the last 3 weeks, I started out about the 10th of August. And I knew that by the time I got back, been back 2 days now, that the whole month of August would have been completely evaporated. And that's exactly what happened, because here we are on the 1st of September. And now I'm going to be home for a couple of weeks anyway. I'm not traveling quite as much as I was, but those were 3 weeks that were really booked solid. And I don't like it when my daughter, Julia, you all know she runs my office. She books things a little too close. And when I came back from Washington, I had went out to Washington, D.C. When I came back, I had 2 days off between the next trip. And I thought I was going to have those off, but when I come back, I found out that she had booked 2 clients on those 2 days. But she said, don't get upset with me. There were 2 people that were coming from Brazil, and it was the only way they could fit it into their trip. So you can't get upset about something like that when somebody is coming such a long distance. But I didn't have time to really rest at all. I went directly into the sessions with the clients. Then I had to go to Greensboro, North Carolina, and I gave a class out there. And I knew when I came back I was only going to have 1 day before heading out for San Jose. So I put a big X on the calendar, and I told my daughter, don't book anything on that 1 day. I got to at least have time to wash my clothes before I get started out again, before you turn around. So I had a very good class in North Carolina, and then I had the 1 day off and went out to San Francisco, San Jose area. I did some lectures out there. I did my class, and then I did some book signings and lectures at East West Bookstore out there by San Jose. Santa Clara, really, you know, they all kind of merge together when you get out there. So it was really a very close planned trip. Now, these classes have been working out very well. Well, this means I'm going to do another one in 2 weeks here in Arkansas, which means no plane rides anyway. It means there'll be 6 of them that I've given this year. And that includes the ones I did in Russia and Amsterdam and London. So it seems like a lot of my time now is being spent doing the classes, which is good. Because I've told you before, there's so many people wanting sessions. And they're coming to see me here in Arkansas, in the middle of nowhere. They're coming from all over the world. I had a man come from China last year just to have a session. Then I had these people from Brazil. I've had them come from New Zealand, from all over Europe. They keep showing up at my doorstep. The people in town, in such a little town, usually know if there's a stranger walking the streets, they've usually come to see me. So it's kind of a joke anyway in town. But they're coming from everywhere. So that's when I decided 5 years ago I was going to have to start doing something about it. Because there's no way I could possibly see all the people who want to see me. I was seeing them when I was going on tours, you know, lecture tours, and I would stay a little longer in each city. Then I could stay for about a week or 10 days and see clients, but I still couldn't take care of all the ones on the list. So I tried to see them here by renting a motel room or something. But there again, I had to stay right there, and it was over in the next city. So that's when I decided to open an office in this little bitty town that we live in, of Huntsville, Arkansas. Only have about 2,000 people here. So I decided to open the office there, and I've begun to see people. But then even that is getting to be where it's difficult to really see all the ones who need help. So that's when I decided to start having the classes. Because I'm trying to pass on what I have learned. The technique that I've developed is so unique and it is so effective that I needed to pass it on to other people to learn. Dr. Henry Bolduc, some of you may know who that is. He's a very famous hypnotist here in the United States. He's the one that urged me to go ahead and do this. He told me one time, he said, you have to teach. And I said, well, how can you teach? I don't know. If it's something I developed, how can I teach that to other people? I don't know if it's possible. But he said, you must teach. You found something we don't understand. And that's when I began thinking about it, and I decided to try it. And a lot of you know now it's been 5 years, and I've given many, many classes, and I'm getting wonderful feedback from the people that I've been teaching. And they're saying they are also having fantastic results with the methods that I've been showing them. So it is teachable, and other people can do the same things that I've been doing. But I have had some people coming to the classes who have been trained in the traditional way, and a lot of them are not really willing to change because they say, this is the way we were taught, and it's time proven. The only thing is, the methods they're taught, they learned them from someone who learned them from somebody else, who learned them from somebody else, who way back there decided this would be a good way to do hypnosis. The methods are old-fashioned and out of date. There's a lot of parts to them that are not used anymore, and that's what I found. I found a lot of things that could be eliminated from the hypnosis process, and you could have much more effective results. You could have quicker induction, and we could have remarkable healing. And that's why my technique is different. I'm not using someone else's that was teaching it. I developed my own. So in the class in South Carolina, I had one woman came from England, and then another woman came from Brazil. And the one I just finished in California, there was two people came from New Zealand, and one woman came from Hong Kong. So they're hearing about it everywhere and are coming here to learn this method. So I think this is what I'm supposed to be devoting a lot more of my time to. I like the lectures. I like meeting people. The one I did out in San Jose was like old home week because there was a lot of old friends that were at that one. And even the last one I did at East West Bookstore, the majority there knew the books and were asking lots and lots of questions about the books. That makes me feel very good because when you're writing the books, it's in one little room by yourself, typing away and always wondering, if anybody going to read this, is anybody going to understand it? And people are telling me they are reading it and they do like the book. So that makes it all worthwhile when I know that. So that's what I've been doing. Interestingly enough, the last show that I did with a guest was with Dr. Haynes Ely from California, and he was talking about his association with John of God down in Brazil. And that was a very fascinating show. And then here, a few weeks later, the people who came from Brazil are also connected with John of God. And the ones who took my class are. So I keep wondering, what does that mean? I keep getting more and more about him. But they also told me remarkable stories. And I really feel that John of God in Brazil is real. He is doing a wonderful service to people. The woman who works with him down there, who was just up here, said they see as many as 2,000 people in a day. That is so remarkable, and they're able to help so many people. She said they have as many as 8 buses a day coming in there. And there are just so many people crowded in. But you know, all of them are not going to be healed because that's the way it is. Everybody is not supposed to be healed. It depends on their path. There are a lot of people, I've told in my classes, that really don't want to be healed. They don't know that consciously. They don't say that consciously. They always say, well, of course I want to be healed. I don't want to be sick. But on another level, they really don't want to be. So that's what they said down there. They occasionally get people who really sabotage themselves. And they want proof and different things. what it is, but it seems as though I'm having more and more connection with the group down there that works with John of God. I have put a link on my website to Dr. Ely's wife, who arranges trips down there. And he said she can arrange airfare and the buses and the hotels and everything for the people who want to go down there and see him. And the other woman that came from Brazil said there are about 20 other websites, too, that will arrange things so that people that want to go down there can make the journey anyway. So that's where I'm at right now, I suppose. I may think of some more things. Right now, we are beginning to put my trip together for next year, because every year, at least once or twice I go out of the country, and I go to other countries to talk. And I told you when I got back from India and Moscow and Amsterdam about those trips. The one we're putting together now, and it's just in the very beginning stages, will probably be next summer, and I'll be going to Australia. I'm not sure if I can work in New Zealand on this trip or not, because it started out to be about 2 weeks, and now it looks like it'll be another month again. But I'm going to plan on doing the expo in Brisbane. I work with Patricia Hamilton, who has the Conscious Living magazine over there. And she always has a conference, an expo every year in Perth, and that's in November. And I told her, I just don't want to go out of the country again that soon. But she is going to have her first one in Brisbane next year. So we're going to start with that. And then I'll probably be going up to Perth, where she lives. And I'm thinking about doing a class up there in Perth. But all of this, if you watch my websites, you're going to be able to keep track of what I'm doing and where I'm going to be. Patricia wants to expand her magazine into many other countries, so she's planning a seminar in Singapore. Now, I don't think I am spilling any beans here, because I imagine, even though it's in the very beginning, baby steps of planning this, I imagine other people have an idea what she's trying to put together. Well, I've been to Singapore before, but she wants to tag it into the same trip to go back there. Then, as long as I'm that close, I have to go to Hong Kong, because I have people there that have brought me in there before, and they'd be upset with me if I came that close and didn't go to Hong Kong. But then I'll be going to one more place that is totally new. I'll be going into China on that trip. For some reason, everything that's been happening in the last 3 months are pulling me toward China. And more people are coming into my life that want to set things up there. So I think I'm going to have to go. And if I'm that close, I don't see how I could not go. In Taiwan, they have translated one of my books earlier this year. They translated Keepers of the Garden into Chinese. And now they're working on the two Convoluted Universe books to be translated into Chinese. And I'd be very interested in hearing the comments, because when the books come out in other languages, I always get a lot of very interesting mail. But I'm curious to find out what the Chinese think of my work anyway. So I'll be going there, and I'm going to be contacting the publisher there to see if we can put something together. We've also been contacted by two other publishers who want to do some more of the books. So I think we'll be working with all of them as we put together something in Taiwan. And then this last weekend at my class in San Jose, I ran into another woman who lives over there in Hong Kong, and she wants to put something together. And she said there's a possibility of even doing something in Shanghai. I always thought you get into the mainland, that's going to be a lot harder, because I didn't know if they were into metaphysics. And, you know, I don't want to go anywhere where people are not interested in this, and I don't want to push. I never try to push my beliefs on anyone or the work I'm doing, but I want to go where I'd be safe and I'd be accepted. So I don't know, but if I'm being pushed to go in that direction, I must be all right. It was just like when I went to the Middle East, when I went to Dubai before Christmas. I was being pushed in that direction, and I couldn't understand why. It turned out to be really a wonderful trip. So I'm getting the idea that I'm supposed to go to Taiwan and possibly Shanghai. We'll see how that works out. But anyway, I'm already starting to work on 2007, so I've got a lot of trips coming up. I really would be curious to find out how that woman that emailed me, you know, where she got the idea that I had died. I wonder, I hope that's not going around the internet or anything. I would like to know where that rumor started, but I think that's interesting anyway. Okay, I think that's enough of that, kind of catching everybody up. Now, I always told Don, don't worry about it if I don't have a guest. I can always find something to talk about, as you well know. But with me, there are so many of my books that I have not even touched on. And I had some people tell me this weekend, they said, we like your having guests on the show, but we like you to talk about your books also. So it looks like tonight that's what I'm supposed to be doing. Now, several of my books I have not spoken on. Before Christmas last year, I did talk about the Jesus book, and I spoke early on. I've done about 30 shows now, and early on I spoke about the life after death. Well, tonight I want to talk a little bit about the Nostradamus material, and I don't think there's going to be enough time to go too much into it, but I will try to at least cover the story of how it happened, because it's one of the most fascinating stories, and it was the greatest adventure I've had out of all the books that I've written, all the stories I've covered, and all the cases. The Nostradamus story is by far the strangest, and I still have a great deal of difficulty explaining it to people, especially people that don't know metaphysics or don't understand what could have possibly happened. Now, we are in the process now of making a movie about the Nostradamus story. When I was out in San Jose, the scriptwriter drove up from Hollywood so that we could have a meeting up there and go over the script as it exists so far. So this is definitely moving along, and it's another project that I'm involved with, is getting the movie off the ground. So that is also coming into fruition anyway. But we're going to focus on the story, because the story is so strange of how I made the connection with Nostradamus. Right. It started about 20 years ago now, because it was in 1986. And in those days, I was just doing normal past life regressions. I was not really into the therapy part of it yet. And I had not really developed my technique for contacting the subconscious mind. I was just doing what I considered to be normal past life regressions. And that was what I was working on. And a lot of the things I discovered then, I didn't understand at all. But now, it's beginning to make a little more sense to me, especially after I went through the convoluted universe work. Some of these things are so strange and way out there that now it's becoming the norm, I guess you would say. But I'm glad that they spoon-fed me along the way. It was like they gave me a little spoonful of information, waited for me to digest that, then they gave me a little more, another spoonful, had me digest that, until I was growing gradually without really knowing it. A few months ago, I had a client who came to me, and one of his questions me wanted to know was his purpose. What am I supposed to be doing? Am I on the right path? You know, what am I supposed to be doing with my life? Which is a very common question. It's about everybody that comes to see me asks the same question. It can be answered if it is appropriate. Because the subconscious will say, suppose you were given the information too soon. Suppose what your future was supposed to be, your purpose, was 180 degrees from what your life is right now. And if you knew too soon, you would say, oh no, that's the last thing I'd ever want to do. And you'd put blocks in the way and keep yourself from doing it. In that case, the subconscious is very wise. It would say, it's not appropriate. So this man who came to see me, that was one thing he wanted to know. What was his purpose? What was he supposed to be doing? The subconscious said, we can't tell him. It's not time. But they said, oh, we wish we could. You don't know what we see. But we have our instructions just as you have yours. But they said, he said, consider he is where you were 20 years ago. He said, when you start off with a baby, which he was taking his baby steps, and I was taking my baby steps, you know, 20 years ago. So if you start off with a baby, you give them milk. Then you give them cereal. Then you give them chopped vegetables. You don't give a baby a three-course meal all at one time. It just is not going to work. That's what they meant. This man was absolutely incapable of understanding what was going to happen because it was way out of his range of learning at this time. And that's the same thing that happened to me in the beginning. The information I'm getting now, if I would have got 20 years ago, I would never have understood it. I would have been overwhelmed, and I probably would have just thrown it away. So it wouldn't have been any good to anybody. So in their wisdom, they were spoon-feeding me along, a little bit here, a little bit there, just like it was saying to the man, you have to take your baby steps. You have to get your pablum. You have to get your chopped vegetables before you're ready to tackle the meat, the real substance of what metaphysics and what all of this is all about. Otherwise, you'd never understand it. And that was what was happening to me when I first made the Nostradamus connection. I was in the beginning, baby steps. Of course, I thought I knew the answers. I thought I had it all figured out. I kept saying I have the whole theory of reincarnation figured out. I know how it all works. But I found out it's not like that. I was thinking in a linear progression because that's the way we're taught. But then I've since found out there are many strange twists and turns and things that I would never have thought of at that time. And in the beginning, when I would get a strange and unusual theory that would come through, I was hesitant. I would say, well, now I've got this all figured out. I don't want somebody rocking my boat. I don't want somebody giving me something that's going to get me all mixed up because I have it all figured out. But then I began thinking about it. If I was not willing to explore, if I was not willing to look at new answers, even though they might upset my belief system, if I was not willing to look at those things, then I was no better than the church that tells you what to believe and says you believe this and this and don't ask questions. So I began looking at these theories and these new things that they were telling me, and now it makes sense. But in those days, it was a daring departure from the way I was had, you know, thought everything worked. I wondered if I had not accepted the new ideas and these radical beliefs that were being thrown at me, new ways of thinking, I wonder if my work would have stopped right there. It would have come to a screeching halt, maybe, because they said, well, if you can't understand this little piece, how are you going to understand the rest? And I would have been still writing the simpler books about the going through time and the history. I love those books. I always think sometimes wouldn't it be nice if I could go back to those days, the ones I wrote in the early part of my career. But maybe that would have been all I'd done. Maybe I would not have explored. Maybe I would not have gone further in my work. My work keeps growing and growing now. But anyway, that's where I was 20 years ago when I started with the Nostradamus material. I was working with a woman who just wanted to see if she had a past life. She was not really into metaphysics. She didn't really understand it. She didn't know who Nostradamus was. She couldn't even pronounce his name later. That's what made it more believable. But I call her an ordinary woman, but she had 10 children. One was deaf and mute, and she had to learn sign language to help that child. She had never finished high school, and she was working two jobs to try to help support this large family. So you can't say it's someone who set out to produce a hoax to fool the world. And believe me, I've been accused of everything. They all say, well, it couldn't have happened. You must have made it up. Well, other people say, you've got to be the best fiction writer in the world. And I said, if you could show me how this could have happened as a fraud, as a hoax, I would really like to know. But anyway, with the woman, we were just seeing if she had a past life. She went back to a time where she was a student, a male student of Nostradamus, living in the 1500s in France. And I since found out after that, with the sessions we had, and the research, was that he did have students at that time. He was a doctor, and he was teaching under the disguise of teaching these students medicine. But they were really learning in secret, and they were meeting in secret to learn how to go into trance, to learn how to see the future, to learn how to heal, all the methods that he was doing. And he had lots and lots of spies that were watching him all the time, because the church said the only way he could be having the miraculous cures that he had as a doctor, he had to be working with the devil. So people were watching him all the time. So these students were doing a very dangerous thing by coming to him in secret and learning, because their lives were in danger if they would have found out. He said one time if they knew what he was doing, he would have either been killed or his land would have been taken away and he would have been put into prison. So the students that Nostradamus had were also taking the same chance that they came to study with him. So she was a student of his at that time, and I kept thinking, wow, Nostradamus, I knew who he was. I'd never studied his prophecies, but I knew he was the greatest psychic that ever lived. So I was thinking, I wonder what a student could tell me about this great man. I figured that had to be the only thing that could happen, was that she could tell me about him. So I started asking questions about the way he worked and what he was teaching and et cetera, et cetera. That's when everything got very strange, because as she was talking to me about him, something strange happened, and it was as though she was conversing with somebody and then repeating it back to me, and she said, he wants to speak to you. Now, anybody who has ever done past life regression or had a past life session done knows that does not happen. Nobody in the scene with the person in the past life will be aware of what's going on, because you are speaking to that person in the other life, and the others are not included. They're just living their lives. But if it is true that Nostradamus was the greatest psychic that ever lived, somehow he knew that his student was having a strange experience. So he said, he wants to speak to you. And then she began a conversation where she would talk to them and then repeat what they were saying, what Nostradamus was saying, and then she would repeat to him what I was saying. She was a go-between. So it's not channeling, and it's not hypnosis as the way it's normally done. I consider it to be time travel, because we were actually there in that time period conversing with him. And she said, he says that he has been looking for a link to the future, because he could see that his prophecies, when he wrote them down, were not being correctly interpreted in our time, and that the things he saw, the things he predicted, were going to come true. They were very, very close to becoming true, and he felt he must warn our time period. It was essential and very urgent that he warn our time period about what was going to happen. So he said he has an assignment for you, that he wanted me to get the book. He could see in our time period there was a book of his prophecies that had come down to our time. He wanted me to get the book and to read the quatrains to him one by one. And he would give me the English interpretation of them and tell me what they meant and what time in history they applied to. Now, when I started this out, I had no idea what a quatrain was. It's a four-line poem. In the case of Nostradamus, it's a four-line puzzle or prophecy. And he wrote almost 1,000 of them. Now, they have never been correctly interpreted until now. Not all of them have not. All the other books that you see out there will tell you what the names of the cities and the towns and the countries and things mean that are in the quatrain, but they won't tell you the prophecy of what it means. They won't tell you what time period. They are guessing, which is about all anybody could do, because this man had a remarkable way with puzzles. He used anagrams and symbolism. He used different languages. He, in those little four lines, it's amazing. And he even used what were called Nostradamus words. These are words that he made up as he went along. So for 400 years, people have been trying to figure out what he meant. But he was so clever. And that's why in my work, we were able to break the code, and because he told us what it was. He told us what the things meant. Why not go to the source if you're going to find the answers? But it ended up, it wasn't just this woman, but it was many, all of them. We were successful in translating and interpreting all 1,000 of the prophecies. It's the first time it's ever been done in history. But on that night, when we were having the session, and he said, I have an assignment for you. He wanted me to do this. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, this is really strange. So when the woman woke up and I told her what she had said, that she was to help me to this project of interpreting all of these, she was so frightened she moved to Alaska. She was from Alaska, and I think when all this happened, she wanted to go back quicker than she thought. She wanted to put as much distance between me and her as she could, because she didn't know what was happening. So you can't say she started it, and you can't say I started it. Something else was at work here that was to bring all of this together so that we would be able to do the interpretation. Well, before she left, I was a week or so after, we had time for one more session. And I think she was doing it more to appease me than anything else, because she definitely didn't want to be involved in this work. So the session was being held with her packing boxes and suitcases. They were having a garage sale because she was, and she said, I've only got 1 hour before they were giving a going away my dinner for her. So we had to do it. I only had an hour to do the session. So not expecting a lot, I did it again, and he came through again, and he said, you must do this work. It's very important to your time period. You have to. You have to write the books. You have to get the information out. And I said, well, how am I going to do that? She's moving away. I won't have access to her anymore. And he said, that doesn't matter. Now that we have made this connection, you will never lose me. That I will come through anybody you work with. Now, that's a big order because I was working with a lot of people at that time. But he said, I will come through anybody you work with so we can get this finished and get the job done. And then before, he kept saying, it will be done, it will be done, it must be done. And I kept thinking, well, I guess you don't know the publishing business for one thing. I was trying to get books published back in those days. And I said, if you're that confident about it. But before he left, before the session was over, he gave me instructions on how to locate him through anybody else that I worked with. And then he also gave me a test to perform so I would know I was actually speaking to him no matter what happened after that. Well, then the woman moved away to Alaska. And at that time, I wrote the first four chapters of Volume 1. Not even knowing if it was going to go anywhere. I said it might just go into a drawer in my desk somewhere. I thought in the beginning it was just going to be an interesting chapter in a book of miscellaneous regressions down the road. Well, that chapter turned into three volumes, but I didn't know it at that time. So at that time, I wanted to have my mindset on paper, so I wrote the first four chapters. The books are called Conversations with Nostradamus. And there's three volumes in the set. And I'm just talking about the beginning of the first volume. And I know there's not going to be time to go into the whole thing tonight, but I did want to tell you some so we can get started on this and probably continue it on another night that I don't have a guest. So then you'll have to wait, I guess, to get the rest of the story, because I've spoken on this story as long as a week. And when I'm giving seminars. Anyway, the woman moved away, and I didn't know if anything was going to happen or not. But it was 3 months before I decided to try it with another one of my very good subjects. She was a music student at the university, and we had worked on many experiments with her. She was excellent. She was able to do what is now called remote viewing. At the time I was doing it, it was just an experiment. I didn't know what it was called. But I would go to her house, and I would have her look at something that was occurring, even on the other side of the world, and she was able to tell me what was happening. At that time, one of the experiments that we had done before the Nostradamus material was the morning of the Chernobyl disaster. And I came to her house just to, as I always did, we used to do experimentation. And she didn't even have the TV on yet. She didn't know anything about what was going on in the world. And I asked her then, do you want to try an experiment? She said, yeah, just tell me what we did after I wake up. So at that time, I had her go in trance to go to Russia and tell me what was happening at that time. Well, we knew more on that morning than the rest of the people of the world knew. It was many years later, whenever the Russians finally released a lot of the facts and the information about what really happened on that morning. But we were able to see it all, and she told me about there were a lot more people had died, There was a lot more damage and a whole lot more than what was in the papers at the time. But we were able to find out on that morning exactly what was going on. So she was a wonderful subject, and I knew she could do experiments of this type. So when I went to her house, it was late at night, and I told her, well, you want to try another experiment? She said, sure. So I followed Nostradamus' instructions, and not knowing what was going to happen, she found him again, the same room, the same house, sitting at the same desk that he had been when we were first talking with the first woman. And he said, well, I've been waiting for you. Now can we get started? So through Brenda, we were able to interpret over 300 of the prophecies by only meeting once a week. And I would just meet. I would open the book. I didn't know what I was reading because they are much too complicated. I would open the book, read the quatrain, the four lines, check it off, and he would give me the answer immediately. It was very seldom that I had to repeat anything to him. We had it immediately. I would check it off and go to the next one. And it didn't matter where I would have started in the book because I found out later that Nostradamus did not put them in any order. The order they are in the books, he said he threw dice to figure out how to arrange them. So they are in no particular order. And so I just would check it off and go on to the next one. At the height of my work with Brenda, the music student, we were interpreting 30 quatrains in an hour. That is absolutely impossible for the human mind to think that fast, especially on puzzles as complicated as this. I would read it, he would give me the answer, and I would go on to the next one. It was absolutely amazing, and I know there's no way that it could have been happening by fraud. She didn't even take time to think. She just gave me the answer, went on to the next. The only time he ever asked for me to repeat it was if he said there was a mistake in the way it was written down. And he found many of these. He found where some had been combined together. They were not his original work. And some of them had been misinterpreted. It was the only time he ever asked me to repeat anything. And my job was to put all of this together, and it took a computer to do it. There were many times I would ask him, does this quatrain go with the one we covered last week? He said, that's your problem. You're the one that's going to have to put it together. All I can give you is the information. You have to put it together and arrange it. So it took a computer, and volume one was over 300 of the quatrains we did. Now, I think the next time we meet, I will go over the other parts of this, because you figure if you got three volumes in a story, it took a lot of twists and turns. It wasn't just these two women. There were many other people that were brought into this. So by the time I completed it all, I had worked with 12 different people. So it's not just one person sitting down and channeling something. This was a lot of people involved. They were all telling me the same scenario, worded a little bit differently, but they were all telling me the same thing was going to happen to the world. They just added little more bits and pieces to the entire story and the entire puzzle. So it's quite an amazing story. And that was my job then to put it all together. But one thing I want to make clear that people have a hard time with, and I did in the beginning, is through all the people I worked with, he always said, when we are communicating, you are not speaking to the dead. I'm not a spirit floating around out here somewhere. When we are communicating, I'm alive, living in my house in France, writing the prophecy. He also knew that I was not dead either, that I was alive in the future. He was so adamant about this, he didn't want me to tell him his own future. He didn't want to know how he was going to die. That's because he was alive, living at that time, and he wanted to keep it that way. He wanted to pass the information of his visions on to us, but he didn't want to know anything about himself. Now, when I'm giving a lecture on this, I always ask the audience, if he's saying he is alive while I am alive and I am communicating with him in his time period while he sits at that desk at his own home, if that is true, then what metaphysical concept does that bring up? It brings up the metaphysical concept of simultaneous time, that there is no time. And time is an illusion. And now I've had much, much more information about it than I had back then. Then I couldn't explain it. But the ETs have even told me time is an illusion. And they said until mankind gets out of the trap being trapped in time, they will never travel in space. The ETs said mankind is probably the only species in the universe that has found a way to measure something that does not exist. So leave it to us to do something like that. But anyway, he is alive when we are communicating with him. And whenever we get into the second part of this story, with John, the astrologer who was helping us, we did interact with him in his life. So I know we were communicating with him while he was alive. All very strange, very unusual, but it did happen. And we have the proof of the three books and all of the translation of all 1,000. They are not all, the prophecies are not, quatrains are not all in the three volumes, because no book could possibly hold all of the information I was given. I had to pick and choose which ones to put in which book. In the beginning, he said, don't worry about the ones that have already happened. They would only be interesting to those people studying history. He said, focus on now and the next 20 years. Now, this was the end of the 80s, which brings it up to now. He said, focus on the next 20 years. There's going to be more startling things happen to the world in the next 20 years than have ever happened at any time in history before. This is a quite remarkable time we're living in right now, and that's why he wanted us to know these things before it was too late. So in the books, I have put some of the ones relating to the past because I wanted to show his remarkable use of symbolism. But he told me to focus on what was going to happen to the world. And it has resulted in three volumes, The Conversations with Nostradamus. And it has been updated several times. And we try to update it on our website because the events keep happening. And they are still happening. Very, very accurate predictions that no one else has ever found the answers to this in all of the other interpreters. But it's we are coming now into the time of this. I've had a lot of people read the books, and they'll said, then they'll look at the copyright dates, and they said, these books were written before the events began to happen. People will write me and say, I'm reading the books and watching it happen on TV. It's very powerful stuff. So now we are running out of time, and I hate to leave you like that as a cliffhanger, but this will probably be a continuing thing as I go through the rest of my books that I've not discussed. So on the days I don't the nights that I don't have a guest, I will continue with these stories. So the next time I don't have a guest, we will pick up again on the Nostradamus material. and I will tell you the rest of the part. I want you to remember my website is www.ozarkmountain.com. Name of my company, Ozark Mountain Publishing, OZARKMT.com. OZARKMT.com. My 800 number is 1-800-935-0045. 1-800-935-0045. You want to know more about the books, about sessions with me, or about my classes. All right, have a good night, and I'll see you next week.